the holy women who went out to the tomb to anoint the body of Jesus certainly had a spectacular experience in that garden. Imagine for a moment if you had been one of them, what it must have been like. Just 3 days prior, their teacher, their master, their friend met a brutal end at the hands of the Roman authorities after being turned over to them by their own religious leaders. They thought he was the Messiah. They thought he would save Israel. And now it looks like their hopes have come to naught. Hope is a very fickle thing. We often say that we get our hopes up. We get our hopes up about something that we're expecting at some point in the future. Some event, perhaps something in our family, or we look at our hopes up about the holidays that are coming. Hope becomes a desire or an expectation that something is going to happen. We can have hope in spades. Yet we also know what it is like to have our hopes dashed. What it feels like to have no hope. When we look at whatever situation we're facing in our lives and we can't seem to see how things are going to work out and we have no hope, we become hopeless. Our human life is a roller coaster of hopes. Those times when we get our hopes up and then those times when our hopes come crashing down. Yet in our Christian life, we say that hope is what we call a theological virtue. It's not a feeling. And what we mean by a theological virtue is that it is given to us by God, and it leads us back to God. Hope is a divine gift that was given to each and every one of us at our baptism. The theological virtue of hope allows us to trust in the providence of God, even in the darkest hours of our lives, when there seems like there could not be any hope. The theological virtue of hope allows us to remember that God holds each and every one of us in the palm of his hands at each and every moment of our lives, and that nothing will harm us, that whatever comes will not be of harm to us. I imagine that the women, when they went out to the tomb that first Easter morning, were probably at the very bottom level, the lowest possible amount of that feeling of hope. Their hopes had been dashed. And there God steps right into their situation. And he turns everything upside down. They see the two men in dazzling garments. And they tell them this unbelievable news that Jesus isn't there, that he's been raised from the dead. And all of a sudden, their hopes must have been buoyed, must have been raised. Something is happening here. And they go and tell the apostles what has just happened. And it's very interesting the way St. Luke records it. He says, but their story seemed like nonsense. And they did not believe in them. The first announcement of Jesus' resurrection from the dead, the first announcement of the empty tomb, was regarded as nonsense. And it was regarded as nonsense by none other than the 11 apostles. The apostles themselves were not using the theological virtue of hope that they had been given. Rather, that they were looking at the situation they found themselves in with a purely human vision. Their hopes also had been crushed, and they would not be quick to believe again. The virtue of hope that God has given to each of us at our baptisms is so much more than just wishful thinking or what the world might call a positive outlook. The virtue of hope is God's gift to us to see with the eyes of faith that all of life's crosses are accompanied by the resurrection. Tonight we gather with Catholic Christians throughout the world celebrating this vigil, the liturgy of keeping watch for the rising of the Lord, to proclaim to our world that the message of Easter is not nonsense, but it is actually the key that makes sense of everything in life. The church's liturgy is full of symbols, and the Easter vigil has symbolism in spades. There's so much that happens at this Mass. And in particular, the symbols of fire and water play a particularly important role. We heard in the first reading tonight that everything that God created, he created good. So the created things of this world can communicate God's message to us. So we use the symbols tonight of fire and water, the fire that gives warmth and light and the water that gives growth and sustains life, to help us understand what God does at Easter. In the beginning of the Mass tonight, a new fire was kindled to battle against the darkness of the night. It's very interesting in St. John's Gospel as he records the beginning of the Passion narrative. He makes it a point to say, "And it was night." The Passion was the apparent victory of darkness over light. That's why St. John says that it was nighttime. But in the darkness of this night, that new fire pierced the darkness with light and warmth, the light and the warmth of Christ. That fire was blessed, and from that fire, this beautiful candle was lit. This candle itself is a symbol of Christ, and the light, a symbol of Christ risen from the dead. And then the light from that candle spread to each of us here in the church. And it gave us great light. It gave us the light by which we listen to Deacon Tim chant the Exultet, that praise of this night, of God's goodness and of his triumph over death. Just as in creation, God separated the light from the darkness, in the resurrection of Jesus, God scatters the darkness of the night, of that apparent victory of the forces of evil over those of God. The light of Christ rising from the dead renews our hope that God's power will triumph over everything. In a few moments, we will call down God's blessing on our baptismal font, on the water that is in there. And each and every one of us will renew the vows of our baptism. And then we will be sprinkled with that holy water. Tonight we heard how God once delivered his chosen people Israel through the Red Sea. How through water he delivered them from the threat of Pharaoh. And just as we have passed through the dryness and exile of Lent, tonight we renew our baptismal commitment and remember that God once saved us through the waters of baptism. As St. Paul said in the epistle tonight, that we were buried with Christ in our baptism so that we could rise with him to new life. And tonight we heard the prophet Isaiah cry out, "All you who are thirsty, come to the water." We thirst for the grace of our baptisms to renew our baptismal promises and to enliven those graces that we were once given and are still ours. And the new holy water reminds us that God's grace is living and effective in the dryness of our earthly exile. To remember that in baptism we have been given the virtue of hope, which is alive and well in each of our souls when we are in the state of grace. This vigil reminds us of the newness of life that first Easter brought and continues to bring. Yes, hope is a fickle thing in purely human terms, but it is a wonderful thing in divine terms. It allows us to see with the eyes of faith that the resurrection accompanies every cross. It reminds us that those who hope in God never hope in vain. As we are refreshed with the new water tonight, we will watch as someone takes a step of faith in their own life. Tim here is with us tonight in the first row, and Tim has been preparing to make a profession of faith in the Catholic Church, receive the sacrament of confirmation and the Eucharist for the first time. And as we watch him take a step of faith right here, right in front of our eyes, we remember that God is continuing to do a good work in each and every one of us, and that he wants to do good work in our lives right now. The resurrection of Jesus still seems like nonsense to some, but it makes perfect sense to us. May the light of Christ rising in glory dispel the darkness of our hearts and minds. And may it guide us on through this life to the eternal Easter of heaven.